supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The state of Delaware is threatening to sue the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency for allegedly failing to protect its residents from bad air blowing across state lines. Details from WHYY's Zoe Reed.
The state's Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control says the EPA has not forced four coal-fired power plants in Pennsylvania and West Virginia to control emissions that travel to Delaware. DENREC Secretary Sean Garvin says those emissions are contributing to ozone pollution in the first state, worsening the air quality, and making residents more vulnerable to respiratory problems like asthma. Delaware has made its own efforts to reduce emissions, like putting more regulations on cars and other vehicles, but Garvin says statewide efforts aren't enough.
We're starting to run out of things that we can control within our own borders without the intervention and participation from EPA dealing with these cross-jurisdictional issues.
In 2016, DENREC filed four petitions for relief to EPA, but the federal agency hasn't acted on them.
EPA generally has been a very good partner with the state. This is one area that is one that we haven't been able to move the ball on. And really, when we're talking about pollution sources being air or water that come in outside the boundaries of our state, we really need that leadership for them to address places which we don't have the authority to address, other than potentially using the courts to get them to do it.
A spokesperson for EPA says the agency cannot comment on pending litigation. From the Delaware desk, Zoe Reed, WHYY News.
The new year marks a new beginning for the Democratic Party in Delaware County. Democrats are now represented in the county's highest offices after a decades-long absence. WHYY's Laura Benchoff has more from the historic swearing-in ceremony.
On Tuesday, supporters of the newly elected officials packed an ornate courtroom in Media, ready to cheer after each took oath. Standing at the podium, David Walk introduced his wife, Mary Walk, who's the new Delaware County Register of Wills. In his remarks, Walk sprinkled in an anecdote about his wife growing up with the county's old Republican Party machine.
Her father told her that if she wanted to get a job at the courthouse or Media, she would have to register as a Republican. Well, she didn't follow that advice.
Now, Mary Walk is one of three Democrats elected to Delaware County row offices last year. The Democrats also won two seats on the five-member county council, the first time in more than 40 years. Newly elected councilman Kevin Madden says the discord around the 2016 presidential election prompted him to run.
What called me to run was the same observation that I think we all have, which is that this hyperpartisanship leads to dysfunction and it leads to stasis.
He and the other Democrat now on council, Brian Zidek, ran together on a platform of preserving open space, fighting the opioid crisis, and economic development. They also campaigned against the use of private prisons, like one in Thornton.
For me, fundamentally, the model of for-profit isn't one that makes any sense within the realm of your criminal justice system.
Republican County Council Chairman John McBlain says many of these goals are a continuation and not a departure from what the all-Republican County Council had been doing. Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
Veteran civil rights lawyer Larry Krasner was sworn in today as Philadelphia's new district attorney. He promised drug treatment over incarceration, resisting the federal government's crackdown on unauthorized immigrants, and second chances for nonviolent offenders. More from WHYY's Bobby Allen.
Krasner has spent 30 years as a civil rights lawyer, but now, for the first time, he's officially a prosecutor.
A movement was sworn in today.
He said the campaign's never been about him, but rather about his progressive ideas that are the opposite of traditional law and order values DAs typically run on.
A movement for criminal justice reform that has swept Philadelphia, as the voters clearly showed, and that is sweeping the United States.
Krasner criticized the use of the death penalty. He said he'll fight to protect the city's immigrants and find solutions other than incarceration for those caught up in the opioid crisis.
Today we start the long road towards trading jail cells occupied by people suffering from addiction for treatment for harm reduction, for finding ways to keep him alive so he can turn his life around.
It was an exciting moment for prison reform activist John Dye Harrell, who says he knocked on countless doors in North Philly campaigning for Krasner.
Typically, politicians make campaign promises and don't fulfill them. I believe he's different. I believe that the things that he said it from the heart and the soul, and he really believes it.
Harrell says there are police officers and rank-and-file prosecutors from past administrations who won't get along easily with Krasner, but he's hopeful it won't hinder his reform agenda.
Yeah, but we're going to have to give him time to implement his ideas, and first he has to begin to change the culture of the DA's office.
Philadelphia has the largest prison population per capita among the country's big cities, and as part of changing the office's culture, Krasner said one of his goals is to reverse that trend. Bobby Allen, WHYY News.
While the new DA may have taken top billing at today's inauguration in Philadelphia, he wasn't the only newcomer sworn in at the Kimmel Center. Rebecca Reinhart became the first woman to serve as city controller. She beat three-term incumbent Alan Butkovitz in the Democratic primary in May, and now Butkovitz is talking about challenging Mayor Kinney for his post. Let's bring WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies in for some insight. Dave, how about if we start with a job description? What does the city controller do, and what might we expect from Reinhart?
Well, it's an office, Dave, that's better known to insiders than the public, but it is envisioned in the city charter as a really important post. The controller is the city's financial watchdog, and the charter made it an elected position, so this chief auditor would have the independence to look critically at city operations. They didn't want the controller serving at the pleasure of the mayor. So the controller can play a really important substantive role in blowing the whistle on waste. And because she's elected citywide, it's a significant political platform. Now, in Reinhart's case, it's interesting because she came from inside the government. She held senior positions within both the Nutter and Kenney administrations, so some may question whether she has the independence. She says she does. She says she'll be tough. She'll save millions. She'll take on the parking authority. And on a political note, I think it's fair to say she is new to elected politics and she has a lot to learn, but this was a big win for her, and a lot of people think she's got a really bright future.
Now, the man she replaced, Alan Butkovitz, is talking about running against Mayor Kenney when he runs for office next year. Was Butkovitz standing in the wings at the Kimmel today?
He was not, Dave. I caught him at home on his first day out of office, and he said he has not made a decision about running for mayor, but he didn't mind listing a lot of things that he felt a candidate could challenge Jim Kenney on.
2 years have been counted down on the four-year term, and there's still no action on the rebuilding of the playgrounds. The whole experiment on pre-kindergarten is limited to 2,000 people. There's still no program for jobs. Half the people in the city are very, very concerned about increases in crime and inadequate police protection.
So you can hear him building a platform there. Now the Kenney administration has answers for that critique, and if they go at it, we'll hear that debate next year. But it is clear to me that Butkovitz is seriously thinking about this.
Looking back across recent history, has the city controller's office been a launching pad for higher office, and especially the mayor's office?
You know, you'd think that it would be, but it mostly hasn't been. You know, old political hands have told me for years that people who hold that office suffer from a syndrome they called controller's disease, that because the controller spends all this time issuing reports and holding news conferences about waste and mismanagement, they think the public sees them as their champion, when in truth the public isn't paying as much attention as they think. And it's interesting, Dave, I went back and checked. We've had 7 elected city controllers since 1950, and 4 of them, Alex Hemphill, Tom Gola, Bill Klink, and Tom Leonard, all ran for mayor, and they all lost. To find one who was successful, you got to go all the way back to 1951. The legendary reformer Joe Clark became mayor after serving as controller. So history isn't exactly on Butkovitz's side. One other note, you have to go all the way back to 1987, 30 years ago, to find a mayor of Philadelphia who even faced a credible challenge for re-election from within his party. That was Wilson Good when Ed Rendell ran against him and lost decisively. So incumbency counts for a lot. On the other hand, these are different political times, Dave. Who knows?
Now, some 2 years into his term, has Mayor Kenney's support started to erode?
Not particular that we can tell. I don't know of polls that say much. He won with a coalition that had 3 legs: progressive Democratic groups, labor unions, particularly the building trades, who pumped a lot of money in through a super PAC, and the Northwest Coalition, a group of African-American leaders who stood with him. As far as I can tell, those groups are all still pretty much with him. I ran into Marian Tasco today at the Kimmel Center. She's the former councilman who leads the Northwest Coalition. She's happy with the mayor, expects to support him for reelection. What could go wrong? Well, the key union leader for him is John Dougherty, the electricians' union leader. There is a federal investigation into his activities. We have no idea what that will bring, but you could imagine a circumstance in which he is unable to be as helpful next time. And then there are the opponents of the soda tax who are hopping mad at Kenny, very determined, and could tap a national funding base to run against him. So there's that out there, too.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies on Newsworks Tonight. Pennsylvania gas producers are emerging from 2017 on more solid footing than the previous year when activity in the gas fields slowed amid low prices. But operators ramped up drilling last year, and they're expecting to drill even more in the new year. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk reports.
In a quarter mile, the destination is on your right.
There it is. There's a rig up right on top of that hill.
I'm at the site of Pennsylvania's newest gas wells. Nine are going in on a pad in rural Washington County. Drilling started here a few days ago in Frank Brownlee's backyard. He shows me around in his pickup.
This is a well pad right here. And this is a well pad over here.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Now, he'll have one a quarter mile from his house. Operators drilled 137 wells in Washington County in 2016. But in 2017, they put in more than 200, including the ones going in here. Brownlee owns a trucking company. All this activity is good for business, which had slowed the last couple years.
Well, right now we haul a lot of tanks onto the frack sites whenever we're doing the fracking.
Like today, his drivers are moving 40 of them. Brownlee looks to the rig up on his hill.
We'll be on that site sooner or later with the tanks.
So, what's driven the flurry of activity in 2017? Emery Kugler is an analyst with IHS Market.
The past couple of months, and then for the first quarter of 2018, there's a lot of pipeline capacity coming online.
More pipelines will allow more gas to flow to market. By spring, several new lines will send Pennsylvania gas to the south, mainly to generate electricity. Kugler says drilling ramped up in anticipation of that, and he expects that to continue into 2018. But gone are the days of 100 rigs drilling statewide, like in 2012 during the boom. Today, there are 30. Dave Spiegelmeyer is with the Marcellus Shale Coalition. It's a trade group for the gas industry.
The operators have learned to be far more efficient.
He says they're concentrating drilling in the regions where they can get the most bang for their buck, like here in the southwest and in the northeastern part of the state. And the wells in these high-producing areas are getting longer, some even 17,000 feet. Here's Kugler again.
So you're getting the equivalent of three wells inside of one well.
But drilling has always been controversial, as is the prospect of more wells. Ned Kittire is a retired pediatrician in Washington County. He's outspoken about climate change and the harm he says the natural gas industry can cause to human health.
What we thought of as shale gas development 10 years ago, when things were really starting to ramp up, it's a totally different situation now.
A decade into the shale fracking boom, many pipelines and processing facilities have emerged alongside drilling. Kittire is concerned this creates a never-ending cycle.
If you're going to build out the infrastructure, then that's the reason to keep extracting natural gas.
He's leery about the possibility of more drilling to feed a new facility in southwestern Pennsylvania. Shell is building a plant to turn ethane into plastic. Ethane comes to the Earth's surface from wells along with pure natural gas. Spiegelmeyer with the Shale Coalition is eager for projects like this that'll provide a market for gas right here in Pennsylvania.
I drove by that plant a little over a week ago, and I think there's 9 cranes.
Construction is still years from wrapping up, but it's a sign that there will be a demand for new wells down the road. More drilling will affect residents here, including Brownlee.
Yeah, everything will pick up now. I think the trucking industry will keep picking up.
Keeping his drivers busy hauling tanks from one new well pad to the next. Amy Sisk, State Impact Pennsylvania.
State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between WHYY, WITF, WESA, and the Allegheny Front to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy. Let's next take up the tech scene and consider what's in store for 2018. Roberto Torres is a lead reporter with the website Technically, which has come out with its Real List, a roster of Philly-based startups to watch. Torres spoke with WHYY's Kimberly Haas about how they make their choices and who made the cut this year.
So, Roberto, let's talk about the Real List. How long has Technically been coming up with this list?
Well, 2017 was the first year we ever decided to compile a list of the companies we thought were doing interesting things, companies that were founded by people with an interesting background in the tech scene, or companies we just for some reason believed in. We did a list of 10 plus another 10 honorary members, and we've been tracking their movements throughout 2017. We found, happily, that most had gone on to raise capital, launch interesting products, or nab talent that is of very interesting people. So during 2018, we're going to do this again, and we're going to try and see if we can spot several trends throughout that process of sorting who's an interesting startup, who is a startup with potential.
Technically, has come up with some pretty specific guidelines on who would make this list and who's significant to watch.
One of the guidelines that we have is sort of founding date. Usually you wouldn't consider a company that's over 3 years old a startup. Another thing is that they would have to offer a specific product or a service, something that the audience can connect with, as opposed to an agency or a creative studio. We also consider startups those that employ at least a group of people. A one-person startup wouldn't be something that would enter the Real List.
So who's brand new on it this year?
I think a few of our members from the first cohort are going to repeat. The first that comes to mind is one that actually changed its name from the first year to the second. Currency became Amino. Now, this company is founded by people that are trying to disrupt a space that the general public doesn't know a lot about, which is how are ads filtered down from a person who wants to advertise a thing to the eyes of the consumer online or in physical formats. They're doing something interesting because they're trying to clarify and bring transparency to the marketplace in which ads are sold in websites. They've already spoken to several people within their ecosystem, and thus far there seems to be a consensus that this is an interesting idea that hasn't been tried before. They also raised a significant amount of money this year. I believe it was around $1.2 million. And so 2018 will be a lot about trying to prove out their concept and show what their real value is to the market.
So who's brand new? Who's an example of somebody that really caught your eye?
I think Port is an interesting company that is born as a spin-out company from a name that a lot of people might know, which is TicketLeap, a locally based startup that started out trying to sell tickets online. That company in 2017 was acquired. And then this new idea comes. What the company is basically trying to do is give small businesses a way to set up recurring revenue. And so the first example of what they do is that they've partnered with a local ice cream shop here so that people could subscribe to ice cream. And so for a monthly fee, you get a specific number of cones, for example. I think it's really interesting because it's the tech community connecting with a broader ecosystem of businesses and providing value to others. And while it's still trying to build out and prove out its concept, it's definitely one of the startups to watch.
When you look at the world of Philly's tech startups, is there anything that distinguishes it from like another city? Is ours different in any way?
In Philadelphia, we definitely see a strong penchant for health IT companies. Big pillar organizations like the University of Pennsylvania, Jefferson, and CHOP definitely have something to do with that. So we see a good number of companies within that space trying to innovate within medicine and trying to bring some of that innovation that the technology scene is known for into a space as stodgy and as difficult to change as healthcare. Philly's tech scene, to answer your question, has a number of pillar institutions from which it builds and it develops growth, but more growth is needed. As venture capital investors noted, 2017 was kind of a slow year in access to capital, in keeping with national trends, but still, 2018 may want to see a bigger influx of capital and make some of these startups go from early stage to a more mature level.
It may want to see it, but does it look like that's going to happen?
As one investor noted, John Gossier from an accelerator called Southbox in South Philly, The latter portion of 2017 was showing a little bit more movement, but I think that the potential for companies to see more venture capital will grow alongside the diversity in which it develops. It's been a conversation that has marked the talks that Philly Tech has had, that it needs to bring a more diverse pipeline of talent into what it does. Diversity in the broadest sense possible, not only racial diversity and gender diversity, but also thinking about diversity of thought, accessibility, bringing in veterans. Investors as a whole see Philly as a more diverse market, and therein, I think, lies its potential.
Towards the end of 2016, Penn opened its Pennovation Center in Grays Ferry. So really, I guess 2017 is the first full year of that in operation. Has that shown up as a big effect?
I think 2018 is going to be the year of interest for Pennovation, where we're going to be looking closely at what it delivers versus the potential that was 2017.
Roberto Torres, lead reporter for Technically Philly. Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you so much.
Roberto Torres spoke with WHYY's Kimberly Haas. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.